Hello and welcome to the ChannelBuzz.ca podcast. I'm Robert Dutt, editor of ChannelBuzz.ca, and as always, your host for the show. Today, we're taking a deep dive into some of the biggest trends in the security space this year as we're joined by Steve Brining, partner technology evangelist for Acronis, to examine what they saw in their cyber threats report for the first half of 2024. We look at the top threats that Acronis saw over the first half of the year, the increasing role of supply chain attacks, the evolution of phishing and social engineering over the last while, and even delve into quishing, which is a new one for me. Suffice it to say, QR codes are no longer entirely trustable, because of course they're not. And speaking of trust, Brining also discusses the benefits of adopting a zero-trust model in your defense stance, and we get into helping employees throughout your customers' organizations be ready for what may come their way through security awareness training. And of course, because both this website and Acronis are very focused on the managed service providers, we consider all of this through the lens of what it means for your business and your security practice. It's a great conversation, so let's get right into it. My chat with Acronis' Steve Brining. Steve, thanks for taking the time. I appreciate it.
I appreciate you having me, Robert.
So you guys have done your roundup of kind of the big cybersecurity concerns and issues of the first half of the year. And I'm just curious to kind of take a look back and see what we've learned, the experience so far in that first half of the year. I guess let's throw it open. Well, I guess to start with, can you tell me a little bit about kind of the nature of the survey and what you look at?
We're looking at it from a perspective of what we've identified as far as the malware threats, like from our service providers, but also looking at things like, what ransomware gangs have been like really, really active out there, right? You know, so there is some independent research that we did, but it's primarily our report that we do it from.
All right. So based on what you guys saw and what you guys, I guess, sort of felt out there on the various networks and systems that you're keeping an eye on, what were the top cyber threats and what are the trends in how those have evolved over the first half of the year?
Yeah, you know what was interesting about that, Robert, is that we found out that the top three targeted countries were Bahrain, Egypt, and South Korea of all places. From an email perspective, over 27% of emails were spam, and about 1.5% of those actually contained malware or phishing links. Compared from Q1 2023 to Q1 2024, we saw a 23% increase in publicly reported ransomware cases, and about a quarter of those ransomware attacks were from the highly active groups, including 20% that actually came from the Lockbit group. So taking all that into account, ransomware obviously continues to be a major threat, and a pattern or a trend in the report was about abusing vulnerable drivers to get a foothold into systems and then trying to disable security tools. And AI was commonly used in those attacks. And I guess from a higher level on a report, and what was really surprising to me, being in this for 30 years, was email attacks detected surged 293% compared to the first half in 2023.
That's especially given that it's kind of the tale as old as time of this. What's driving that kind of a jump? Is it sort of the arrival of AI into this space that you know it's easier to pump those out en masse with subtle differences that hopefully result in from the attacker's perspective more impact?
Yeah, the way I see it from an email perspective, right? If you think of Microsoft 365, a lot of people have moved to Microsoft 365 and, you know, bad actors want to play where the game could be played, right? So there's more of an attack surface of email. They're going to use that. And also, if you think about it with AI, you think about it, Rob, years ago, it used to be, oh, how do you identify a phishing attack? And it used to be, oh, misspelled words and things like that. Now with the advent of ChatGPT, my thought process almost is like, if it's written too well, that might be a phishing scam, you know, because they're using all of that to improve those kind of things too.
Yeah, it can sometimes come down to word choice, can't it? It's like, that doesn't seem like the word that a person would have chosen in that exact place. It's a funny but subtle difference, right?
Yes.
You kind of touched on what you're seeing in ransomware. Amazing that it's kind of it sounds like it's the domain of as much as I'm sure there's a long tail, a few kind of large operators who are who've really operationalized this, made it the a scalable business almost.
Yeah, I mean, Lockbit was a big player. Again, publicly reported, what we saw was about 413 of those from Lockbit. There was a group, a thing called Operation Kronos out there. It was led by United Kingdom's NCA or National Crime Agency. They got support from Europol on that and Eurojust and some other global agencies. They disrupted the Lockbit ransomware gang operations, and they took control of 34 servers that compromised their primary infrastructure and about 14,000 accounts that were used for hosting tools and storing stolen data. They also confiscated about 200 cryptocurrency wallets out there and about 1,000 decryption keys, which helped develop a publicly available decryptor tool. But weeks later, Lockbit became active again, despite all the arrests that they did.
Just
So it
can't
was
keep
like
them down.
Lockbit, Play, 8Base, Backbast, I think were really, really big from the most active.
In terms of, I think what we've talked about so far will sort of certainly inform and color this. But in terms of the vectors being used to get to MSPs, how are MSPs being attacked? And what do they need to know about kind of those avenues?
Yeah, I guess from a top vectors perspective for service providers, definitely we're seeing phishing and social engineering where the employees at the service provider are tricked into divulging sensitive information or even executing some malicious actions, right? That would facilitate unauthorized access and data breaches, right? And then we're also seeing vulnerability exploits where they exploit weaknesses in software, whether it be operating systems or even the network infrastructure, to just get some initial access into the service providers' networks. And they're leveraging often known the vulnerabilities with, well, publicly available exploit code, right? Credential compromise, where they're stealing the credentials. Again, it could be phishing, credential stuffing, and the vulnerability exploits, right? And then finally, I would say supply chain attacks. Where the threat actors are infiltrating the trusted software updates with malware, where they would bypass those traditional security measures and gain widespread access into their clients' networks.
Well, okay, let's start maybe with that last point of the supply chain attacks. Now it's funny that all of these trends, all these macro factors that you're seeing are kind of all of them are familiar topics, but just curious from your perspective, A, how impactful are those supply chain attacks, and B, as an MSP, what should I be doing about it?
Well, I mean, I think that supply chain attacks, I mean, they're definitely a significant threat due to potential widespread damage. Again, they target the software services used by the provider to infiltrate a client's network, right? So that could be very severe to the service provider responsible for managing that infrastructure of many clients, right? So one breach can compromise many companies at the same time. I don't mean to pick on one company, but a notorious example of that would have been the SolarWinds attack, right? SolarGate, I think called it, right? So the hacker inserted malicious code into the software update that allowed access to the network of about thousands of companies there out there, right? So a service provider, for them, this type of consequence can range from loss of client trust, financial losses, potentially legal liabilities. And I would even go even further, say that the service provider would face reputational damage, impacting their ability to attract and retain clients from that perspective.
Yes, that's certainly a risk when you're hanging your hat on the security of your solutions.
That's true.
Another old and tried but true method, you touch on sort of phishing and social engineering. What kind of impact have you seen there? And is there more to protecting against that than sort of the basics of A, having the right solutions in place, and B, just making sure that training is there, that all the people who have access to stuff have the best practices in mind in terms of not clicking and casting a cynical eye upon email.
Yeah, I mean, as earlier, the one that really sticks out to me was the email attacks detected, the 293%, first half of 2003 to the first half of 2004, and 27% of the emails were spam, right? So from a phishing perspective, that's pretty significant, right? And the social engineering, I mean, that's a broader term, right? That takes many flavors. So the training and awareness you're talking about definitely helps with that. So, again, the training is the big thing. So if you wanted to talk about mitigating all these types of things, right? Again, loss of trust, think about it, like multi-factor authentication, implementing some kind of zero trust security model, work on your password management policies, privilege access management. One big one for me is network segmentation. Looking at least having an EDR product, hopefully an XDR product, but an EDR product. And then regular audits and monitoring, but definitely the security awareness training piece.
All right. You touch on kind of one of the big buzzwords or trends in the space with zero trust. Can you sort of explain from an MSP's point of view the benefit of taking a zero trust approach and kind of how it works for them?
Yeah, zero trust now is the never trust, always verify syndrome, right? It used to be trust but verify, right? Now it's never trust, always verify, right? So every request, whether it's internal or external, gets subject to verification. And what that really does is you're minimizing the attack surface by segmenting networks and applying very strict access controls to reduce areas for vulnerability, and making it hard to move laterally throughout the environment. Just so happened to breach one segment. Okay. A lot of regulatory frameworks are requiring more strict access controls now and also having detailed monitoring of network activity. So zero trust as an architecture, a lot of people think zero trust is like a software. Found that interesting, but it's an architecture, right? That helps ensure that the users and the device interactions get logged, authenticated, and even authorized, right? So it's about mitigating even insider threat. Continuous verification of the user credentials and activities, and it could be accidental or malicious, right? The model for zero trust is scalable, and it's adaptable to different environments, right? Whether it's cloud, on-prem, or hybrid, right? And then also with the continuous monitoring and the strict access controls, MSPs can detect and respond to those threats quicker.
Curious your assessment of where the MSPs that you're talking to are at. I know Zero Trust is sort of a well established architecture methodology out there, but I'm curious if you find that MSPs are well on the road to getting as many customers as possible sort of built out that way and making that the de facto standard.
Well, I mean, the first thing I would tell them is, you gotta start with at least, least privilege. If anything, start with the least privilege thing, right? Where you give people the minimum access, to do their job appropriately. Again, zero trust is more of an architectural type framework, right? So it becomes more of a culture philosophy within the company, from a zero trust perspective.
So
That's the way I would look at it.
it's sort of a matter of getting customer buy-in and getting them starting to think in those directions.
Again, thinking about network segmentation. Some of the things that people happen with zero trust is you'll hear people say, "Oh, there's just so much multi-factor authentication. I'm getting MFA fatigue." Well, there's all this balance, right? There's a balance between these, right? It's just like, security at the risk of convenience, right? And convenience at the risk of security, right? So there's always this balancing act, right? So I would say definitely do some least privilege, right? But again, once you get to the point where you can do like, hey, no one's trusted by default, whether it's inside or outside the network, again, that's least privilege, micro segmentation, device access control, and multi-factor authentication are all part of that holistic approach to zero trust.
All right. You've smattered throughout here, you know, some good advice in terms of things to be thinking about and approaches to take. Any other kind of general macro advice, recommendations for MSPs in terms of how to keep themselves and their customers safe now and how to, as much as possible, future-proof both themselves and their customers? Since if there's one thing for sure in the security space, something's going to change and evolve over time.
Yeah, well, it's the only constant is change in this industry, yeah. I'd say. So again, we talked about the security awareness training, a lot of cyber insurance policy. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that are requiring those kind of things. And you got to have a regular cadence, right? You know, keep it top of mind. You know, some people just do once a year, right? I don't think once a week is good either, right? So, you know, you got to get that delicate balancing act. You know, in the military, we have a thing called see something, say something, right? Yeah. And, you know, security is everybody's job, and there's all these posters all over the place, right? I would also say with the multi-factor authentication, if you have a choice between SMS or authenticator app, I would choose the authenticator apps because there's been SMS compromises out there. We talked about network segmentation, EDR, XDR, right? Yes, we have that. Where you deploy those things with AI and behavioral analysis, you know, you get your threat intelligence integrations, right? Because one of the big things I always tell people is prevention and detection cover different parts of the threat landscape. Right. And prevention is not everything, right? Because people, they can do persistence attacks, you know, with MITRE's TTPs and do a persistence attack, right? And that's going to bypass it, you know, fileless malware living off the LAN, right? Things like that. Mm-hmm. I would say patch management. It's still to this day, you know, people with patch management, it's just like they're really behind the eight ball, but really keep up on your patch management process, whatever that may be. Just implement it because that's a big area too. I would say data encryption, all right? Encrypt sensitive data, both in transit and at rest. That sounds like everyone should be doing it, but you'd be surprised. Data loss prevention, right? To make sure that there's no unauthorized data exfiltration, right? In that aspect. We talked about network segmentation. But another thing that, you know, and it's really funny, I just went to a convention. Incident response planning, develop, but regularly test these incident response plans, right? To see how you can recover from the security incidents to minimize the disruption and damage. That to me would be another one that people really need to look at as well. If we wanted to talk about some other areas to help with service providers.
I think that's a great point to bring in. It's one of those things where you have to have it, and B, you have to know that it will work if it's called upon. And the best way to do that is to have those fire drills.
Well, think about it. Humans, if you think about it, when they're under stress, sometimes when an attack happens, if you don't have a proper playbook, right, mistakes get made.
Absolutely. You touched on SMS as a vector and as a methodology for security there, which brought to mind something not directly related but tangentially related that was mentioned in the report and not a term I've heard before. Quishing. Can you tell me a little bit about how QR codes are becoming a vector of attack and what we need to know about this?
Yeah. You know, I never heard that term until earlier this year. And I just saw a report, I forgot who it was, that said 2025, be prepared, because that's going to be the big thing. And at this event I went to, we talked a lot about this. Again, it's a new term. And it's about login impersonation. I definitely see it as an emerging trend going into 2025. So what that means is, you know, it used to be, you know, vishing, smishing, right? Video, SMS. Well, quishing is now QR code phishing, right? So say an attack, it's about login impersonation. So say an attacker sends an email and the display name is set to, shared file access, right? And there's an attached PDF that actually contains a QR code to scan and access the documents. And then this, one of the ones was that brought up a fake Microsoft login page. And now you're logging in. And well, we know where that goes, right? So that's a QR code attack. One of the things that I'm seeing people doing, and I tell people to be very aware of this, even from a consumer side with Quishing, I could create a QR code and I could print it out at the same size as a parking meter and stick that sticker over the parking meter. I've seen it literally in restaurants, where restaurants are now saying, oh, we don't give out the full menu, but here's a QR code, right? Yeah. Well, make sure that it doesn't have a sticker on top of it. You know, and overseas, you know, I was just overseas. You know, when you see this parking meter and it has mm-hmm. a QR code for you to pay for everything. Well, what if that's a bad one and you skim it? It looks like you're going somewhere to pay for that parking meter, but mean now you're giving your credentials, you're giving them credit card information, you know, and now you're on a trip and then something happens and then you're like, oh, I got to stop my card. Now, how do you pay for things when you're overseas? Right. So,
and you're doing all that off of a trusted kind of basis, because you're probably not thinking of a QR code as a vector of attack.
Correct. So I always tell people, just be very careful now with QR codes, just like you would a phishing emails.
This is why we can't have nice things, Steve.
Exactly. You know, just people just need to be a little bit more vigilant. And again, it's everyone's job to have security at a company. And that's why the security awareness training, in my opinion, it keeps it fresh in mind. Again, we just, you know, at Acronis, we just started presenting a security awareness training as well as a new product. And, you know, one of the things is you can do smart phishing campaigns, right? So who's passing, who's not, how often do you do it, right? You know, so you just got to keep it a little bit in mind to people from time to time. And next thing you know, they start reporting suspicious stuff that they get in emails, and that actually reduces the attack surface at a company.
No, makes sense to me. There's a lot in there, and an always changing world in security. Thanks for taking the time to highlight some of the things that you guys are seeing, both in market now and as kind of the things we need to keep an eye on next.
I appreciate it, Rob. Thank you.
There you have it. Emerging trends in the security space and what they mean for you and your business, courtesy of Acronis' Steve Brining. I want to thank Steve for joining us on the podcast. Thank Acronis for their ongoing support of the site. And of course, thank you for listening today. The ChannelBuzz.ca podcast will be back in your podcast player very soon. So please subscribe or follow the show if you haven't already. And if your app allows, leave us a review if you feel like it. Until next time, I'm Robert Dutt for ChannelBuzz.ca. Stay safe out there, and I'll see you around the channel.